Okay. So just, the fact that we have inner critics is it, I just want to normalize that. That's really, really normal. And then rather than just being polarized against it, and it's already its own form of aversion, and then disliking that this is part of us and that it's carrying this suffering, rather than being polarized, actually turning a little curiosity toward it and getting to know our inner critic a little bit better. So I want to invite you to write in the chat, right, if you can, if you don't mind. What function does self-criticism serve? Is there any value in self-criticism? And if so, what good may it do? Humbling. Thank you, yes. Face reality, right? Self-improvement. Evolutionary function for survival, improvement, none, allows for growth. See clearly what's going on. Stay safe. Perfectionism. Be made aware. Enables to realistically assess our own behavior for our improvement. Right. Thank you. Yeah, these are great. So it's motivating, it can help us behave better and avoid further criticism, and kind of keeps us on our toes, supports perfectionism, realism, humility, free feedback on everything one does, thinks, and feels, right? Yeah. Yeah, so thank you. Yeah, so these are all ways in which the inner critic is actually trying to help us. Also noted that one person said none when the question, what function does self-criticism serve? And that's also can be the case. And she's saying gentle awareness instead of criticism, right? And that's where we're headed with this. So very often the critic has these helpful, supportive, ways of trying to help, at least initially, at least in its genesis, that's what it was trying to do. The desire to keep ourselves safe in some way. Whether that's socially safe by being humble or sort of hypervigilantly scanning for appropriateness in situations, or even physically safe, just the different ways in which the critic is trying to protect us from some perceived danger, even if the methods that it uses are unproductive. So that's helpful to know. And we're going to bookmark that and come back to it in a little bit. So now I want to ask, are there ways that self-criticism harms us? And how might it be getting in the way? And go ahead and share your thoughts about that in the chat. Ways that self-criticism harms us. Or how does self-criticism get in the way for you? Depends on how it manifests. Kindness keeps us safe. Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. When it's distorted, which is often, yeah, that's right. Makes us close up, right? Can shut us down. Get stuck in a pattern of negativity. Yeah, self-criticism is pure harm, no benefit. For me, it gets in the way of ease and confidence. Ego. Stay small when I believe it to be the truth, right? Spiral down, yeah. Emotionally consumes me. Yeah, ouch, right? It can really really be painful, hurtful, can spiral us down, emotionally consume us. And someone else said, can make us treat others with same criticism, right? That same harshness that we can turn toward ourselves, we can turn it towards others. It's the same process. Yeah. Great. So there are these ways that it maybe might be trying to help us in its skewed way. But it also causes a lot of harm along the way, which is sort of what aversion, how aversion is. There might be some little clear discernment going on in self-criticism, something that does need to be changed or protected. But its methodology is so harsh that it causes more harm than it certainly maybe initially was meant to do when it was created in the mind. It's important to remember that sometimes a critical inner voice is internalized from early caregivers and has no redeeming value whatsoever, as was mentioned in the chat, when Rebecca was saying no value at all. And that's certainly true very often. The critic, if it's repeating messages from abusive or neglectful caregivers, it might have been safe for us to agree with that in order to feel connected and belong, and then it became habituated, and now it's just that voice. So it's not always helpful, and even when it is trying to be helpful, it has all this residual harm that comes with it. It's also possible that to not have a harsh inner critic, as you're listening to this, you may think, and it's very possible not to have one. But rather to feel physically or emotionally exhausted when things go wrong with our lives, to reflect discouragement or unconscious self-criticism, which can manifest in a variety of ways. Gail said, creates low self-esteem. Yeah. Yeah. So there's this inner voice, the inner critic. We have another inner voice, our inner compassionate self, our inner caring self. Rebecca is saying, kind awareness does the job. Yeah. So we have this inner compassionate self, and the inner compassionate self also wants us to be safe and also wants us to perform at our best, but has a whole different sort of way of going about inspiring that, creating safety and inspiring and motivating us. So the inner compassionate self provides unconditional self-acceptance, so it doesn't have all that sort of residual harm that comes with the critic. And with that unconditional self-acceptance, continues to want us to change behaviors that are causing problems in our lives. So genuine compassion isn't the same thing as self-indulgence. Genuine compassion really loves and cares the way you might imagine that a really loving parent might really love and care, and thus keep, and unconditionally love and accept the child and make sure the kid is healthy and well and thriving as best as can. Similar kind of an energy. So what we're going to do for the rest of this evening is explore what it feels like to motivate a behavioral change from both a self-critical and a self-compassionate perspective. Because of the way that we tend to think in duality, it can be really helpful to see, oh yeah, this is how it feels when I try to motivate myself with self-criticism. And here's what it could feel like to motivate myself with compassion. And then just feeling that compare and contrast, helping the mind to choose compassion. So that's what we're going to do. And I forgot to say at the beginning of this talk, and it's really important to mention that this talk and exercise that I'm about to lead comes from the Mindful Self-Compassion curriculum created by Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer. I'm in the middle of teaching two classes on mindful self-compassion, and when we came through this lesson recently, last week, I think, I thought it would be great to bring here. But if this kind of material speaks to you, you can find, you can Google Kristen Neff or even just go to selfcompassion.org. There's lots of stuff there. And I teach it regularly also. Okay, so for this exercise, we're going to be doing a little writing. It's if you're not in the mood to write and you're in a more zen type of space, that's totally fine. But if you would like to, get something to write with. Okay. So what we're going to be doing is thinking about a behavior we have that we would love to change or like to change. And we're going to be working with how it is to have the self-critical voice manage that thing we want to change. And then we're going to be practicing with a compassionate voice. So as we're doing this, if you notice yourself kind of closing, like the heart opens and closes all the time, right? And one aspect of compassion is honoring that, including right now, or as we're doing this exercise. So if you're finding yourself opening and into it, fantastic. If you're finding yourself kind of starting to shut down a little bit, I want to encourage you to honor that. And it's totally okay to just sit back and listen, or practice mindful breathing, or whatever, and stop the exercise anytime. Okay, so if you like, taking out a sheet of paper and think about a behavior that you'd like to change, something you maybe beat yourself up about often or sometimes. And choose a behavior that's unhelpful to you and that's potentially changeable. Don't choose a permanent characteristic like my feet are too big. Okay. So, examples of behaviors you might be criticizing yourself for are I procrastinate too much, I don't exercise enough, I get impatient and snap at people. I'm too accommodating. It's taking a moment to write down a behavior that you'd like to change that you typically criticize yourself for. And also, if you can, write down some of the problems that this behavior is causing you. Okay, and just another moment here. Okay, so now please write down what you typically say to yourself when you find yourself doing this behavior. So, how does your inner critic express itself? Are there unkind words that are used? Is the tone of voice harsh? Sometimes it's all in the tone. And sometimes there are no clear words, but more a feeling of judgment and disapproval, or coldness or heaviness, or even sometimes an image. Okay, and just a few more moments with this one. And finishing up. Okay, now switching perspectives and taking a moment to get in touch with the part of you that feels criticized. Take a moment to notice how it feels to receive this message. What has been the impact on you? Letting yourself feel. And if you wish, you can try giving yourself compassion for how hard it is to be the recipient of such harsh treatment. Taking a sympathetic moment for yourself, maybe validating the pain, like this is hard or this hurts. All right, and just a few more moments here. And finishing up. And now turning toward your inner critic with interest and curiosity. Reflect for a moment on why the criticism has gone on for so long. Is your inner critic trying to protect you in some way? To keep you safe from danger? And to help you, even if the result has been unproductive? And if so, please write down what motivates your inner critic. If you can't find any way that your inner critic is trying to help you, and sometimes self-criticism has no redeeming value whatsoever, Continue to give yourself compassion for how you've suffered from self-criticism in the past. If you did identify some way your inner critic might be trying to keep you safe, see if you can acknowledge its efforts. Maybe even if it feels authentic, there's some appreciation for what it's trying to do, even in its distorted way. How it's trying to help. Okay. So now that your self-critical voice has been heard, we're going to see if we can make space for another voice, your inner compassionate self. This is a part of who you are. In fact, it's a central part of who you are. This part of you is very wise and recognizes how the initial behavior that you wanted to change, how that is causing harm, and also wants to support positive change, but for different reasons. Not because it thinks you're bad or wrong, but because it wants you to be happy. So if you like, you can close your eyes, placing your hands over your heart or another soothing place, feeling their warmth. And reflect again on the behavior you're struggling with. And we're going to offer ourselves some phrases that might come from a voice such as this. I'll offer some and you can see if they land or if you can find some other language. Like, I care about you and I don't want you to suffer. That's why I'd like to help you make a change. Or, I don't want you to keep hurting in this way. I'm here to support you. If you prefer, you can bring to mind the image of a person or an imagined being or an entity who cares deeply about you, and imagine what this being might say to you right now. Okay, and if your eyes are not open, you can open them now and begin to write a little letter to yourself in a compassionate voice. So freely and spontaneously addressing the behavior you'd like to change, but from this voice of care. And what emerges from the deep feeling and wish, I care about you and I don't want you to suffer. If you're having difficulty finding words, it might be easier to write down the words that would flow from your supportive heart when speaking to a dear friend who's struggling with the same issue as you. Your inner compassionate voice may say, I care about you and I'm here to support you. I'll be here for you no matter what happens. If you found some new words for your compassionate self, let yourself savor the feeling of being supported. And if you've had difficulty finding compassionate words, that's okay too. It can take time. The important thing is that we set our intention to try to be kinder to ourselves, and eventually new habits will form. So taking a few more moments here just to finish up for now. Okay, and this compassionate letter that you began, if you were working that way tonight, if you feel willing to continue working with it after tonight, writing from the voice of the compassionate self can be a very powerful tool for strengthening and giving more language and just sense of space to that voice. So continuing on with a self-compassionate letter after tonight, if you feel like that speaks to you. So I'm wondering if anybody feels willing to share what that experience is like, just the process. You don't need to share the content of the exercise. But more, what's it like to identify the voice of inner criticism and your inner compassionate voice? Anybody feel willing to share about that?
I can share what I felt.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Rose. And then Nathan, I'll get you next. Go ahead.
The feeling that I got from the inner critic was like being a little kid who's getting yelled at for doing something bad, being shamed by your parents, and just really scared and alone. And the voice of self-compassion just made me feel like I was getting a hug and just felt, very lovingly supported.
Oh, that's wonderful. Great. Thank you for sharing that. That's very clear. The difference is really like a 180. That's wonderful. And, you know, this is not what you're mentioning. I mean, you were just sharing your experience, and I love that. And it made me think of something else that might be helpful to share, which is that we might have an experience like you just described, Rose, where the critic feels like we're a kid getting in trouble, and the compassionate voice feels like a hug. But still not trust that the compassionate voice will motivate us adequately. And so two things about that. One is it might be helpful to know that research shows that people who have a self-compassionate voice and motivate themselves from it are actually more likely to succeed, because the critical voice, as we were discussing earlier, actually can inhibit action. It causes contraction in the nervous system and can inhibit us. Whereas we feel braver and less afraid of failure when we're being motivated by the compassionate voice. So that's one thing that can help if we're not trusting the hug. And the other thing is our own experience. Just, you know, the Buddha said, try it out for yourself and just see, just have some willingness to experiment with motivating yourself with compassion and then see what happens. Yeah, thank you, Rose. Nathan.
I thought the exercise for me was, it showed a couple of really interesting things. One is that the critical voice and the compassionate voice, how, for me at least, they were kind of on the same side. They were trying to both do the same thing, but approach it in just very different ways. And the critical voice for me was lots of like, don't do this, or, just saying like, just don't do something,
Yeah.
rather than, while the compassionate voice was saying like, oh, I know where you're trying to go and what you're trying to achieve. What if we tried this? Or like, it was just kind of redirecting rather than saying no or don't. And so,
Yeah.
but I sense that they're very much like coming, drawing from the same place of knowing that I'm trying to go on this journey of insight, and like both trying to get me there just in very different ways.
Yeah, that's beautifully described. Thank you, Nathan. It reminds me of I think I said this last week, but I don't remember, so I'll say it again if I said it last week. But I live near a middle school, and so I walk my dog by there a lot. And the other day, I was walking my dog by the middle school when one of the PE teachers was trying to get all these kids, like 100 kids, to run around the block, and it was evident that he was wanting the kids to do their physical activity. And his method was this militaristic screaming at the kids, you know? But like you're saying, he's just wanting the kids to do what is on the curriculum for the kids to do, you know? It's just that his method was, you know, harsh. And yeah, so that's a great insight to see that desire to motivate and then. And then with our investigation to see if the compassionate methodology, like you were describing, Nathan, works. And what I'm positing is it works. And not only does it work, but it works better. But that's for you to discover. Yeah, thank you. Louisa.
Oh, thanks. What I discovered was that the compassionate presence was very physical. I felt the warmth, almost like the I've got your back or arms
Yeah.
or like the buddy system.
Yeah.
And the critic was more from the brain. It was colder. And words, it was words. So very different. I think the first person spoke about the hug, that
Yeah.
was physical and from here. And
Yeah.
yeah, so that was really useful. Thank you.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Yeah,
Thank
thank you, Louisa.
you.
Yeah, the critic lives in the left lobe of the brain, doesn't have a direct connection with the amygdala, which experiences emotion. But it does, so it's a little disconnected, but it and so it uses language that it's learned, including all that harsh language. The medial prefrontal cortex, where we experience not only mindfulness but also warmth, friendliness and warmth, is connected to the amygdala, so it has a direct connection to the limbic brain, and it's also connected to the mammalian caregiving system, which uses tone of voice and soothing touch as its two main languages. So yeah, it's there's a whole somatic language going on there. It's really neat that you noted that. Yeah.
Tone of voice and touch. Did you say tone of voice and soothing touch? Yeah, thank you.
That's for all mammals. Yeah.
Love that.
Kanti. I'm not sure I'm saying your name right.
Yeah, Kanti.
Okay.
Yeah. The self-critical voice for me gave me downtroddenness and defeat and
Yeah.
definitiveness,
Yeah.
but the compassion just open up possibilities and options. and hope. So.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Yeah. It's a huge difference, isn't it? It's really something. And we can deliberately cultivate that inner compassionate voice and let it be more and more habituated. You can see, you know, the Buddha taught that freedom, well, freedom is a big word, but we can take it down in size a little bit and say well-being. But well-being is definitely central on the path to freedom. That well-being is created by wholesomeness, wholesome actions towards self and other. And wholesomeness is just friendliness. It's just integrity. It's kindness. And you can really see the relationship between wholesomeness and well-being, or kindness and well-being, when we use mindfulness to feel it in the body. Like the difference between what you were just describing, Kanti, about how we feel with the critical voice, how aversion feels. Does aversion support well-being? No. How compassion feels. Does compassion support well-being? Yes. And we have these myths in our culture that, like, somehow somehow compassion is related to weakness or being spoiled or being narcissistic or self-indulgent or lazy, and just all these yucky language around it. But when we actually have the courage to experiment with it and try it in real time and bring our mindful awareness to it, we see that no, in fact, it just makes life more livable. And like we just said, Kanti, possibilities open up. It's the relationship between wholesomeness and well-being. Any other thoughts or comments? All right, well, I thought, so what we're cultivating, not just with practices of self-compassion, but with all the practices that we do here, it's mindfulness or awareness of impermanence or equanimity or appreciative joy, or, you know, all the different experiencing no self, all the different parts of this practice. What we're doing is inclining towards well-being, and we're creating a mind that is a friend to others for sure, but also a friend to ourselves, a true friend to ourselves. And so I thought maybe a good song to sing to acknowledge this path towards being these deep friends to others and to ourselves is the song, You've Got a Friend. So I want to share that on my screen with you and sing it with and for you. It's true about Sangha, that we're friends to each other. And again, with this self-compassion practice, it's the kind of inner landscape that we're working to create. Okay, can you see that? Great. I just realized I need to get my guitar chords. When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand, and nothing, whoa, nothing is going. rise and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call, and I'll be there. Got a friend. If the sky above you should turn dark and full of clouds, and that old north wind should begin to blow, close your eyes and think of me, oops, and call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call, and I'll be there. Got a friend. Hey, ain't it good to know that you've got a friend? When people can be so cold, they'll hurt you and desert you. Well, they'll take your soul if you let them. Oh yeah, and don't you let them. You just call friends. Thank you so much, everyone, for being here together tonight. Wonderful to share this time. Wishing you a lovely week. James will be here with you next week. All right. Good night. Oh, may the merit of our practice be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Bye.